We're doing Navi. We're up to the book of Samuel, and we're up to the second chapter. We had learned how Elkanah, descendant of Korah, had a child, Shmuel. We had learned how Shmuel, in his first trip up to the temple, was going to remain there for life. And then when they came to slaughter the sacrifice, so Shmuel speaks up and says, "We don't have to wait for a Kohen. Anyone can do this." And they bring him before before Eli, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. And Eli says, "Technically, you're right, but you just gave a halachic ruling in the temple, which I'm the chief rabbi of Israel, especially the temple, but for sure all of Israel. So you deserve the death penalty. Mora halacha b'fnei rabo." So Hannah pleads before him and says, "No." And he says, "I'll pray. God will give you another child." And she says, "No, I want this one." And it goes back and forth until finally Eli acquiesces. Eli prays that Shmuel will not be punished, and Shmuel remains studying under Eli. Elkanah goes back home, and he continues having children with Hannah. Eli's children are not proper. They don't behave the way they should. Eli has two children, Hophni and Pinchas. And when a person would bring a sacrifice, so one of their servants would come with this big pitchfork, bang on the pot that they'd be cooking the meat in, and he'd say, "I'm sticking in my fork, and whatever comes out goes to the Kohanim." So the Jew would say, "You know, we haven't yet finished offering what has to go on the altar. Why don't you wait till that's fully burnt, and then you're allowed to eat it?" And the lad would say, "No, I'm not waiting for the meat to cook. I'm taking it raw. The Kohen gets his meat fresh, and if you're going to push me off, then I'm going to come by force and take it." Now, when someone comes to you and you're in the temple, think about it. You're in shul, and someone threatens you with force. You don't feel like continuing to daven in that shul. Someone comes to you and says, "You're going to give me a donation, buddy, and if not, I'm going to take it out of your wallet." You're not too happy coming to that shul. But this was the lone temple, right? This is Shiloh. They don't have anywhere else to go serve Hashem. And so the pervading atmosphere in Shiloh was not a positive one. People would come and there'd be long lines, and the Kohanim were taking their time dealing with the needs of people. People's wives would come to bring the sacrifice, and then they couldn't go back home because there was a long line and the Kohanim weren't doing things diligently. So they'd end up sleeping up there by the Kohanim. So people used to say, "My wife is sleeping with the Kohanim." So the Navi words it as though the Kohanim slept with other people's wives. Doesn't mean they were intimate. It means, yeah, they had camps of women there sleeping up by the temple where the Kohanim were sleeping as well. So people weren't too fond of what was going on there. This was the desecration of Hashem's name. And again, Eli's children did it on level one, where they didn't treat the sacrifices with respect. Their servants already took it to level two, where they were threatening people. And Shmuel, even though technically he's given to their influence, he is up at the temple studying. Shmuel is the exact opposite. He is diligent in the service of Hashem, and he's known for his piety. He's already dressed like the pious. He has that long coat that the pious would wear. And every year his mother would make him a special coat fit to his size. And every year Elkanah and his wife Hannah would come up to the temple. Eli would bless them that you've given a donation, so to speak, to Hashem. You've given your child. Hashem should bless you to have more children just like him. Every time they'd get that blessing, they'd rush back home to be intimate. So the blessing should be fulfilled. It was never really fulfilled. They had more children. None of their children were like Shmuel. And it was fulfilled in that she was no longer barren, but they never had children who were as great as Shmuel. Shmuel is the equivalent of Moshe and Aaron. So Eli heard what was going on, and he calls in his children, and he says, "Why are you doing this? People, I hear your reputation is going sour. People are speaking badly about you. This isn't good. What I'm hearing about, the way people are talking about you is not a good thing." Now that's an important rule, what Eli is saying here. Our sages say, you want to know what a person is, see what people say about him. Like the Mishnah says, shem tov, a sterling reputation, is the crown that goes above all the other crowns. It's the crown you acquire for yourself. Whether you're a kohen or not is not in your hands. whether you're a descendant of King David or not, is not in your hands. But whether you have a great reputation, that is in your hands. Your reputation is what you develop for yourselves. And so Eli tells his kids, if you have an argument with someone, you could go to court. If the court doesn't do justice, then Hashem gets into the picture. But if you sin against Hashem, who's going to rule between the two of you? You're starting up with the wrong one. One being one, right? And they don't listen, even though they should have listened. Hashem has already ruled that they're going to die. Shmuel grows, and here the Navi uses a term we find in a few places in Tanakh. Shmuel is positive with Hashem and with mankind. And that's what the Torah tells us. A person should be positive with Hashem and with mankind. Sometimes we're tempted to go in one of either directions. To be positive with Hashem, he's so focused on his prayers, he doesn't notice that he smacks the guy in his face as he's shuckling. He doesn't notice as he puts on his talis that he flings it over his shoulder, that he's smacking the guy with the strings of the talis. He's so diligent in his prayer that when he runs out of the room and slams the door shut, he doesn't notice that he's waking up the other guy. So that's why the pasuk says to be good with Hashem and with mankind. So a person can be good with humanity. Very often people want to be do-gooders. They're good with everyone. But I don't keep Shabbos, but I'm visiting my mother in the old age home. You don't want me to visit my mother in the old age home? How am I going to go if I can't drive on Shabbos? Balance. Good with Hashem and good with mankind. They work well together. And from here we also learn the rule that a person has to be careful of maris ayin. A person has to be careful what do people say about him. Sometimes a person knows what he's doing is right. The question is, what do the onlookers think? So sometimes you have to make sure they know. Imagine you're, one of the examples it says is if you're walking with your mother or your sister in the street. So you have to be careful. Don't do things that people might think, hey, he's, you know the old joke, the guy's walking with a girl and he sees his friend, so he says, this is my cousin. So the guy says, she was my cousin last week. A person has to be careful, as it says in the Braisa, that not everyone knows who your relatives are. So if you're going to be very warm and friendly and hugging and kissing and it's your mother, people might not know that. Don't do that in front of everyone. So a person has to do things that are good with Hashem and good with humanity too. We take both into account. We keep a balanced life. So Elkanah is sent on a difficult mission. Remember, Eli is the one that blessed Elkanah that he would have kids. Elkanah is the leader, he's the prophet of the time. Eli is the high priest. Eli has blessed Elkanah, and his blessing comes true. Elkanah brings back his son to be educated by Eli. And suddenly Hashem sends Elkanah and tells him, go to Eli and tell him the following. Back when the Jews were in Egypt, so I appeared, the first prophet I sent to the Jews in Egypt was your great-great-grandfather, Aaron the Kohen. Aaron came to the Jewish people in Egypt and said, Hashem wants to take you out of Egypt. Stop serving the pagan gods you're serving, the pagan Egyptian gods. The Jews in Egypt didn't listen. Hashem said, begun with them. Finished. What am I going to do with them? I asked them to stop serving idols. They're not listening. Let them get lost in Egypt. Then Hashem said, okay, I promised Avraham Avinu I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take them out. And then Hashem appears to Moshe a while later and tells him, I'm going to keep my promise. Go tell the Jews I'm taking them out of Egypt. So step one, Hashem says, who did I appear to? To Aaron, right? Aaron came to the Jews in Egypt. They didn't listen. That's what the Navi in Yechezkel describes. So Hashem says to Eli, he says, when I appeared to your father's house in Egypt, and I chose him to be my priest among all of Israel, and I gave him that honor of bringing the sacrifices, offering the incense, to wear special garments, I gave him the responsibility of all the sacrifices of Israel. So then how come you reject that? How come you kick back at my altar and my sacrifices? You give more honor to your kids than me. You let them take the first foods and the first sacrifices. Hashem says, I was ready for your family to be the leaders of spirituality in Israel for eternity. And here we learn a rule. When Hashem gives a gift, Hashem gives it ongoing, unless we ruin it. If Hashem gives King Saul to be king, then the promise is that King Saul will be king, as will be his descendants, unless he messes up. When Hashem gives David HaMelech the throne, it's to David and his descendants. When Hashem makes Aharon the Kohen, it's Aharon and his descendants. And so too, when Eli was Kohen Gadol, that his small family was supposed to be the continuation of being high priest forever. And Hashem says, no way. Those who honor me get honor from me. And those who don't, well, I let them fall by the wayside. Days will come that I will uproot your strength in my temple. And Hashem curses him that none in his family would live to an old age. And you will watch how the rest of Israel continues to develop and prosper. And your family, Hashem tells Eli, will all die young. And the Talmud says, even in the days of the Talmud, there were families that it was known their children wouldn't live beyond the age of 18. And they were families of Kohanim, families of priests.
So imagine, like, every time at age 18, they give birth to someone, then they die. Birth and then die.
So the Talmud says, we'll see later on, that Hashem told him the way out of this curse is by learning Torah and doing kindness. It says Rabbah and Abaye were both Kohanim. They were descendants of Eli. And Abaye did kindness and Torah. Rabbah did primarily Torah. He didn't invest as much in kindness, so he outlived him. Okay. So back to... or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe Abaye was primarily Torah. I don't remember which way.
Does that go like also for their descendants, for the ones who do good?
Their descendants have to do their own, right? They don't undo the curse for the future, just for themselves.
Abaye was also an orphan, right?
Correct.
Yeah, because his parents died.
He says the sign that this curse is going to come true is that your two sons, Eli, Hophni and Pinchas, will both die on the same day. And then I will ultimately establish a Kohen, a priest, that I can trust. And he will be the one who will go before my king. Now it took almost a century or half a century for this curse to come true. It's only towards the end of David HaMelech's reign that the priesthood was taken away from Eli's family. So Shmuel is serving Eli and learning from Eli how to be a God-fearing person. And there are very few prophets at that time. Shmuel's father, Elkanah, is a prophet, but there are very few prophets. And Eli is lying down, and he's an old man, and his eyes are starting to dim. And it's the evening. The flames of the menorah are not yet out. And Hashem appears to Shmuel. Shmuel is about to get his first prophetic vision. And whenever Hashem appears to a prophet, the first prophetic vision is given in a voice that won't scare the prophet. So Adam gets his first prophetic vision in a voice that won't scare him. Moshe Rabbeinu gets his first prophetic vision in the voice of his father, Amram, so that when he hears it, he thinks his father is there in the desert with him. And Shmuel is going to get his first prophetic vision in the voice of his teacher, Eli. So Hashem appears and doesn't say. If you remind me, I can check. It might say in Seder Olam Rabbah. Shmuel is lying down and he hears Eli calling out Shmuel. So what does he do? He runs out to Eli and he says, I'm here. What can I do? I'm here, you called me. Eli says, I didn't call you, go lie down. So Shmuel goes, lies down, and Hashem appears a second time and calls out Shmuel, and Shmuel runs to Eli, and he says, I'm here because you called me. And he says, I didn't call you, son, go back, lie down. So Shmuel goes, lies down a second time. And again, he hears Shmuel, and he runs out a third time, and he says, I'm here because you called me. And Eli understands that this is Hashem giving him his first prophetic vision. So Eli says to Shmuel, go lie down, and if the voice calls you again, so say, speak Hashem, for your servant is listening. So there's a lot to learn from this. What was the message here to Shmuel? Why did he have to go three times? What was the message to Eli that Shmuel runs to him three times and he doesn't grasp that it's Hashem talking to him? And how could Eli tell Shmuel, your servant is listening? Shmuel is already on a level that he could call himself Hashem's servant. Shmuel goes and lies down, and Hashem appears and calls out, Shmuel, Shmuel. And Shmuel thinks, maybe someone's playing a trick on me. He doesn't want to say, speak Hashem. So he just says, speak, your servant is listening. And then Hashem begins the prophetic vision. Yes? So the Medrash says about Yaakov and Avraham. I don't remember if it says it about Shmuel. It says in the Tosefta of Tractate Brachos. You want to see, do we have Tractate Brachos? No. In the end of the first chapter, you could look it up, of the Tosefta of Tractate Brachos, it says that when the name is said twice, it's an indication that as humble and kind and good as the person was before Hashem appeared to him, he remained that way afterwards too. Sometimes a person gets a prophetic vision, so now he's a big shot, right? No, here it's telling you that before he became the great leader, Shmuel, and after he became the great leader, he had the same humility. Wow. That's what it says in the Tosefta.
And he wasn't angry because Hashem called him 3 times.
Of course not, right.
I heard you the first time.
So Hashem gives him a prophetic vision. And when we speak about prophetic visions, so we have to know that there are different types of prophetic visions. There are different levels, but there are also prophetic visions which are informative. Sometimes Hashem reveals to the prophet what's about to happen, but it's not necessarily because he's supposed to tell it over to other people. Maybe it's because he's supposed to pray about it. Avraham Avinu is told that Sodom and Amorah are going to be overturned. He's not supposed to go to Sodom and Amorah and do something. He's supposed to pray about it himself. So Shmuel is going to get a prophetic vision. And the question here is he supposed to tell it over or is it his own personal vision? So Hashem tells him, I'm going to do something in Israel that when people hear it, so that their ears will ring or their ears will peel off. It's a metaphoric term. And then I will fulfill what I promised Eli. His two sons will die on that day. And I will show him that I'm punishing him over what the transgressions of his sons. He knew they were blaspheming and he didn't rebuke them. So even though he chastised them, obviously Hashem was telling him he didn't do enough. And here Hashem says something that seems stern, but in fact, it's forgiving. Hashem says, I promise the house of Eli, their sins will not be forgiven with an offering forever. So it seems very stern. It makes sense. Their whole sin was that they were inappropriate in their behavior with the offerings. They can't use the offerings to atone for what they did wrong. But the flip side is, our sages say that it's the other way around. Hashem was telling the house of Eli, it's only with a sacrifice that you will not gain atonement. But if you do other things, such as being kind to your fellow man, such as learning Torah, such as praying, you can gain atonement. So Shmuel doesn't run to tell Eli what he just heard. And the next morning, he does his job, opening the doors to the temple, and he's scared to tell Eli what he just saw. And Eli summons Shmuel. And Shmuel is standing there, and he doesn't want to say. And he says, Shmuel, my son. And he says, yes, I'm here. And he says, what did Hashem tell you? Don't hide anything from me. We'll pick up here, Bezat Shem, next week.